the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, episode 103. Len, and all the hype, I forgot that next week is our two-year anniversary. How are you doing over there?
I'm holding well. How could I not be? I'm looking at what's going on around me, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. And the price is looking very good. The price of Bitcoin is looking very good. A lot of the predictions are coming out to be true. This is just turning out to be a wonderful couple of weeks for us, not for a lot of other folks, though. But you know what? It's not like we didn't tell them, because we've been warning people for a long time.
Yeah, this show especially has been warning people. Let's not delay here. A little housekeeping, and then we'll get into the sponsors. This week, no, let's start with last week. Last week on the CBP, Bitcoin Island, right?
Yes. Ethan came on, and we'll actually, I have a comment from one of the Fountain Boosts about that. He was on, and he was showing off after the show what it's like over there, because he took his computer with his camera that was attached to it and took it outside the office, and man, it looks so beautiful over there. And
love it.
Just an FYI, because it was our evening, it was their morning. It's about a 13-hour difference, I believe, the difference in time. So it was just, the sun was just rose and everybody's getting ready to go to work, and it looks so beautiful over there. Man, what are we doing here? It's snowing.
I know. We had 60 centimeters the last week or so in Southern Ontario. So
in inches, Joey, because we have a lot of American people.
What would you say that is? It's, I don't know, 2 feet-ish, 2.5 feet, depending on where you are. Yeah, somewhere between 2 feet and 2.5 feet. So we had Bitcoin Island. Not Bitcoin Island, sorry. No, what is Bitcoin Island? It is, right?
Yeah, it's Bitcoin Island in the Philippines. And Boracay, okay, I think, is the name of the island. I may pronounce it incorrectly, but
Baroque. Sounds like it might be Baroque.
But yeah, it could be it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay. Like that. Friday, I was on Mike Campbell's Money Talks for, man, what a week to do that show. I gotta be honest with you, okay? When I've done that show, the first time I did it, I didn't do any prep. Mike had great questions, and me and you around this stuff enough that you can give a good 15 or 20 minute spot without too much difficulty. I wrote down so much shit for the show that I did with him in the probably 2 hours before I got on there. I usually finish my morning of work around 11:30, and I was cramming for that exam. There was just so much going on that morning and the night before that there's just no way I could have given a decent show without doing, you know, that much prep. So I hope you check that out. We like Mike. He's a friend of our show. We got to get him back on here at some point. This week on the CBP, I think it'll probably be me. I'll be talking to Francis Puyo of Bull Bitcoin Wednesday night. So that'll be a good show. He's a live wire, to put it lightly. I'm sure we'll have lots of fun stuff to say given the recent events. And of course, every week you can check us out over on Axis of Easy, over on Easy DNS, which is also the sponsor of the show. If you haven't checked out Easy DNS, you ought to. Mark Jeftovic, who's the proprietor, did a show with our friends Tom and Nick Carrazza last week as well on Your Life, Your Terms. Very good. I think after hearing Mark talk about the potential for inscriptions, Len, I have flipped to the pro inscription side, much to your chagrin, I'm sure. And we can host a Twitter space where we just fight about it for an
watch
hour.
Watch this deflection really, I'll just masterfully deflect this. Did you end up showing up to that? Because I was listening to the interview, and I'm halfway through, and they did mention at the beginning you were going to show up. Did you end up showing up to that?
I didn't.
Okay. I haven't finished it. I'm only halfway through, so I was hoping to have a surprise cameo.
I didn't have time. Next time I might, if I know that they're doing a show like that with somebody we know. But when you get to the Ordinals thing, you may have some interesting commentary on that. Maybe we'll see.
Maybe.
We'll see.
We'll reflect this to the next thing. The Canadian Bitcoin Conference is also coming up. I just want to make sure that everybody's aware that it's taking place this June, the 17th and 18th in Toronto, the Chelsea Hotel is where it's going to be held, and there's tickets available. Check it out. They have the early bird tickets, $345 Canadian, and there's a bundle ticket for $498, taxes excluded for these prices I'm mentioning. The bundle ticket gets you for the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, but also the Bitcoin Rodeo in Calgary the month after. So yeah, if you're looking to get in, now's the time to get the early bird or to bundle tickets.
I've heard some commentary about those tickets being too expensive. That's a nice venue. It's in the summertime. There's going to be a lot of good speakers there. You've seen them kind of released little by little here with more to come. Glenn and I know there's a few more names that I think you really enjoy. So don't hold the price against the conference. Conferences are always expensive. I hope you guys give it at least a look. On the Easy DNS side, one more thing I want to mention. Like, shout out to Mark and the team over there giving my wife everything she needs, because God knows you and me do not have the chops to provide when it comes to the website stuff.
I do not have the technical capabilities to even remotely come close to
MediumBitcoiners.com is live. There's a picture of you and me on there that my wife thinks we need to replace. So I meant to tell you that we have to do headshots. Do you have any preferred locations for us to do headshots? What do you want to do? What do you think?
You're springing this on me. You know what? I'll send you the link to the ordinal. You could use that and go from there. How's that?
I might as well throw that one in.
So.
Well, Len, that's all I got, buddy. Do you want to do fountain shouts?
Okay.
Hit it.
Yeah. So I'll start off with Killed by BTC said that banger episode, boys. Clown World was on 11 this week. This is with respect to last week's episode. Cashin' out of fiat. Since you two glorious bastards are all killer, no filler, I'm just going to boost before this even starts. So I love this. Before it even starts, he just boosted us. So that's very cool. Thank you very much. Mo BTC Dick, post-show boost. Also, what happens when the last generation that could afford homes pass? Does Canada import the wealth to prop prices up? Good question. You have any thoughts on that question, Joey?
We seem to import everything good and bad. So I don't see why we would change our MO once the boomers are gone. I don't know. I did see a good take from Andrew Bentley, who's an old time Twitter friend of mine, who made the case that basically all assets will become tax deficient against real estate. And the incentives, even if real estate is super expensive, the incentives will just be too great to buy anything else but a house, because real estate's so important to modern economies here and in the States, probably in Europe too. I'm not sure exactly to what extent, but basically huge rationale there that I hadn't really given that much thought to be honest with you, that everything will just become too difficult to own from a tax perspective, and everyone will have to just keep pumping the real estate bags for the next generation or the generation prior. Interesting stuff. I got to give that some more thought. Maybe there's someone we can ask about that. I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, maybe we could ask somebody in the very near future. And Doug and Roop writes in, thanks for the shout out. Glad you took the comment in good humor. This is with respect to he becoming friends with both you and I guess, on through Fountain, but he's not cool enough to become a friend with Odell. So we were just kind of making fun of that. Let's see. Somebody wrote in, it's user 4622. It's just some random username. My wife is heading back to Philippines for a few weeks this summer, going to show her this podcast to help convince her to go to the Bitcoin Island. I like that very much.
It's a must.
And last but not least, Joey's Achilles. He always makes a triumphant return. I don't know who the heck this guy is, but anyways, he says, wow, I'm surprised Joey isn't interviewing Ethan in person for this pod since he's always on vacation. Least he could do is interview some Bitcoiners while he's there. Great pod, as always, legend. So, yeah, Joey's Achilles. I would love to know who this is, because this troll has been around for months. I guess, you know, you could be a NIM in this environment, and it always remains so. But, man, I'd love to meet this guy. This guy's an absolute joke. But that's it, Joey. I just maybe you could go to the price of Bitcoin if you have nothing
else
you want.
Yeah, let's do it. It's 24,225, up 9% on the day, probably something like 25% in the last week, right?
Is it that much? Let me just
take gotta be close, right?
I got about
gotta be close.
5 days around 11%. Could be more over 7 days, so I can't see that. But in Canadian dollars, I might as well do it. 33,327, above the $30,000 threshold, which is a very nice number to be, and a massive bump today. I wonder what happened. What do you think, Joey? Is an eventful day or what?
We're going to have lots to talk about. I'm sure you got takes. I'm sure I got takes. And God knows, you know, I was explaining to my wife today how there was a third bank thinking about going under this morning, giving it some thought. She wasn't interested. So maybe you will be. Can't wait to get into it, buddy.
You know, a lot of people are not interested in it, apparently. And I've been
they don't even realize how many people don't even know. Like they just don't know. Suddenly. They don't know.
I just for food for thought, I checked the Star, the Globe, National Post, CBC. Of those four, only one had anything on the front page related to what's going on with the financial crisis, banking crisis. And that was National Post, and they had one small link to an article. It wasn't a big, huge article that they have listed on their page. So of the four, only one had it. Kudos to them. But that was a small, very, very small segment of their homepage. Nobody seems to care. This thing is going to hit people like a ton of bricks. And
yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. We got the bank run, USDC, burr.
Where do you start? I got all these notes here from Thursday talking about Silvergate. And like Silvergate is not, it's like not even a story now, basically.
Well,
I mean, it is, but it's not even close to the focus that it was 48 hours ago. It's crazy how fast this happened.
Well, you didn't mention Silvergate was the first domino to fall. That was last week on Monday that all this took place, Tuesday-ish. We talked some of it on last week's show. And Silvergate, you know, with all due respect, it's been taken out of the spotlight for Silicon Valley Bank, SVB. Now, SVB, Joey, that's the ticker name or acronym for the bank. So, just interestingly enough, it has the same letters as BSV. So they were doomed to fail just by that alone. So that unfortunately, they set themselves up for failure. Also, First Republic Bank and Signatures also reporting problems too. So there seems to be a lot of issues to go with other banks as well. But we can't talk about those two yet. Let's talk about Silvergate and SVB, where they both shut down operations because, well, they had some liquidity issues and it's a bank run that took them down. Who the fuck could have predicted this? I don't want to get into the specifics as to what was the catalyst, what causes, because this has been talked about at great length up until now. I do want to talk about a few interesting facts that hopefully doesn't get missed during this during our talk today. And, well, SVB is still in existence. It's a different bank. They dealt with VCs, startups, all this other thing, all this shit. So they created this niche product that other banks really did not want to touch. And that's fine. They built up a reputation. And the reputation, well, it extended all the way to Moody's. And Moody's, check this out, had given them a credit rating of A. And that's as of March 7th. AAA being the highest, and it collapsed on March 10th. So in 3 days, they went from A to AAA. I went on Moody's website to see what the fuck is an A, because A to me seems rather good, but you know, let's see what Moody says. They say obligations rated A are considered upper medium grade and are subjected to low credit risk. Low credit risk in three fucking days went to a dumpster file that you couldn't drink enough water to piss on it to put it out. That's how fucking fast this thing went from A to absolute trash. That means to me, this Moody's thing, their credit rating, it's absolutely meaningless. So fuck you, Moody's, with your credit rating, because this is an example that it means absolutely nothing. But we could talk about some fucked up shit. SVB, they paid out bonuses just hours before the bank was seized by authorities. The bonuses were done for work in 2020. Clearly, this work was so fucking valuable of epic proportions that it did enough to just capitulate this bank, but yet they had to have been rewarded for this amazing work. The fucking gall of these people to pay themselves bonuses just before this whole thing would tits up. Not just that, it was reported that executives also sold off a shitload of shares. I'm going to name them right now. I'm going to name and shame. Gregory Becker, CEO, sold 11% on February 27th. Michael Zucker, the general counsel, he sold 19% February 5th. Daniel Beck, the CFO, sold 32% February 27th. Michelle Draper, the CMO, sold 25% February 1st. They did this all these actions, knowing full well they are going to fuck over the shareholders. They are there to represent the shareholders. That is their job. They're there to help them usher in a new grand wealth and all this prosperity for the bank, which obviously they failed to do. Not only that, they did these moves also to screw over the customers. The customers in which they are working hand in hand. And these customers rely on the fucking money provided by the bank in order to make payroll, pay their bills, mortgages, food, all that shit. These are the people they fucked over. These are the actions they did. The system they want us to use and operating in, this is fiat banking system. Incredible. Of note, no fractional reserve. Okay. They take on unlimited risk. They could privatize the losses. Sorry, privatize the profits. The losses are socialized, so we have to fucking deal with this thing.
Someone said today, when there's no reserve requirement, the losses are inherently public every time.
It's a great way to look at it. Yeah. It ultimately gets to that point. You can't operate in that and expect to have year over year of being solvent. Eventually, something's going to happen. You'll have a black swan event that is going to basically put you into a territory where you can't meet obligations, and here they are. We have to fucking pay the price. It's like 2008 all over again. But in this situation, really just add another zero and, well, kick the can down the road and here we are. Really, they don't give a fuck about us. And these actions prove it. And these are the people that are closest to those in power. They have a lot of money that they could use for donations. They have a lot of human capital that they could allocate for lobbying. But not only that, they're also in the inner circle. Get this. SVB CEO Greg Becker, which I mentioned him earlier, selling a bunch of shares. He was on the board of directors for the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. So the people responsible for creating money are also then going to be responsible for bailing their friends out. Zero checks and balances. Zilch. The Daily Mail reports. This is an example.
Let me stop you there. Do you want to keep going? The CFO at Silicon Valley, former analyst of Freddie Mac. We know how that went. The chief administrative officer, former CFO of Lehman. We know how that went. And the chief legal officer was a general counsel at Citibank in 2008. We know how that went. It looks more to me like the Washington Generals than the Globetrotters over there, doesn't it?
They're bound to win, according to Krusty the Clown. But Daily Mail reports that SVB had no head of risk assessment for 9 months before it collapsed. They also say that what they quote here is the woke boss for Europe, Middle East, Africa was busy organizing a month-long pride campaign and a lesbian visibility day. Those are their priorities. Risk management, due diligence, no fucking way. The Fed money printer has their back. They've always had it and they always will. We talked about Janet Yellen, and she was saying people should feel confident that the banking system is safe and sound. Yes, yes, yes. I love it, Janet. Keep bringing this on. We can now continually watch the Oscars. March Madness is coming on. All this bread and circuses shit that a la the Roman Empire, it worked oh so well for them. Oh, by the way, their empire fucking collapsed. What's left? We have withered monument and old statues to look at. And if we continue down this path, we're going to have some statues with spray paint on it with no genitalia and fucking painted or tomato soup stained paintings. And that's all we're going to have left of this. But back to Yellen. She said they're definitely, quote, not considering a bailout, end quote, to the government backing all deposits beyond the federally FDIC ceiling of $250,000. Not considering a bailout. Now, I've done a little bit of research here. What's a bailout? Okay. A bailout, an act of giving financial assistance to a failing business or economy to save it from collapse. I believe their actions is indeed a fucking bailout. But you know what? Maybe we should just fucking throw all this shit under vaccine. Keep redefining vaccine. Right now, it's a substance used for stimulating immunity to a particular infectious disease or pathogen. And throw in it an act of giving financial assistance to a failing business or economy to save it from collapse. All this shit we could just keep throwing in to vaccine. Ladies and gentlemen, you could have that word and just continually run with it. I don't got to give a shit, but this thing is indeed a fucking bailout. They say they're going to pledge collateral, including U.S. treasuries and other, quote, qualifying assets, which will be valued at par. This is a house on fire, And they are telling us they're keeping warm with the flame. They are not telling us this thing is coming crumbling down. Currently, 93% of all deposits at SVP are above that $250,000 threshold. So they are giving money to the other 93%. The 7% should have got it, but no, no, no. Everybody's going to get it. Now, I get it. There are businesses that need the money, but this is still indeed a fucking bailout. And this single bank, it's going to require $175 billion in order to be made whole. FDIC has about $128 billion in their deposit fund. That was at the end of 2022. So probably went up a little bit, but it's still about $50 billion shy. Now, Biden was talking about an overdraft a few weeks ago. Maybe he was talking about this, the FDIC insurance plan going into overdraft and being subjected to high user fees. But I don't know. Maybe that's the case. I have no fucking clue. But they're saying, quote, no losses associated with the resolution of Silicon Valley Bank will be borne by the taxpayers. Who the fuck is going to be holding the bag at the end? I can tell you who's going to be holding the bag. It's going to be fucking us. Every time we go through this bullshit, we are the ones that are fucking dealing with it. Our savings, our income, everything is fucking wrecked as a result of their meddling. Every time they fucking print more money and give it to their cronies, we fucking suffer the consequences. They're paying off all these future obligations with today's money, and we get fucking wrecked. That's what it is. So don't listen to what they're saying, because we are the ones going to pay for it all the fucking time. And if you look at the balance sheet all the time, they say the assets and liabilities, they match up. Well, the one liability they do when they create debt is they give us also the liability, because it goes on our balance sheet, because we take on the fucking risk of their fucking garbage moves. Anyways, I don't understand why people aren't pissed off. You know, you go look at, and as I mentioned earlier, you go look at all these news sources. They don't fucking mention anything. Nobody seems to give a shit. But the fucking financial system is going to crumble. JP Morgan, for example, has $28 billion in cash. A lot of money. But their liabilities, $3.3 trillion. That would just fucking cripple it. That's granted, this is the biggest fish in the fucking pond. And we have some smaller fish now that are fucking tits up because they drank some water from East Palestine. But as these smaller fish continually fucking fall apart, eventually the bigger ones are going to feel the pain too. It's being reported by FDIC that U.S. banks, $620 billion unrealized losses in 2022. What the fuck? That on a line item, that's like number three or four in terms of the U.S. Balance sheet or what they're spending in a given year. It's not going to be too long before the IMF and World Bank comes to the United States and gives them some sort of plan for a bailout. Of course, that's never going to happen because the IMF is the Federal Reserve, but it'd be fucking laughable if we have this. And then on top of all this, we have this debt ceiling. Now they're going to create more debt. And they have this debt ceiling. As soon as they fucking raise it, well, now they have to raise it again because all this fucking debt, which they say is not going to be borne by the taxpayers, will be borne by the taxpayers. And that debt ceiling have to be raised even further. Fuck. All I can say is, you know what? You could open up a bank account. You have zero liability in the end. The CBP who has failed to acquire a bank account, we should open our own bank account, run shot. They just fucking go nuts. Everything we're going to fucking do, who fucking cares? Because we'll get bailed out in the end. And on top of this, we have also the CPI print coming tomorrow, in fact.
Yeah.
And then the New York Fed, I love this. They're saying inflation expectations are going to fall to 4.2%. From all this garbage, they're coming out with these pipe dream ideas that the inflation is going to be lowered. And
it's a finesse. It's a finesse. Like, what else can you call that?
Softening of the numbers. But this doesn't end there. Like, it extends into Canada as well. Our finance minister, Freeland, released a statement yesterday saying the Canadian government has been closely monitoring the situation with SVB, and I have been receiving regular updates. This evening, I spoke with financial sector leaders and the Bank of Canada. We are in close contact with OSFI, which took action earlier this evening. Canada's well-regulated banking system is sound and resilient. Obviously, it looks like they're doing something. They're scared. And I like that they're doing something. But unfortunately, it's too late. The system is fucking rigged. And I'm just going to go one last thing. USDC. This is kind of a collateral damage from all this. When I was watching this, it went down to 88 cents. Yeah. I am shocked because I thought this was going to be a Luna-type collapse because it lost a peg because it had exposure to SVB. I've been talking about this all along. They're not backed one-to-one, and there's always a risk to go alongside with it. The one thing I never thought about, it's brilliant, though, is that the savings they have or the money that they have in holdings was at banks, and the banks were going to fail, and that's going to be part of the reason why they would collapse. This makes total sense. I can't believe I didn't see this, but it just goes to show you that these are shitcoins. Unfortunately, I know people living abroad require them because there's a lack of hard currency going around. But still, if you look at the most regulated stablecoin, USDC, and it suffers this collapse or near collapse, I can't believe people went back into it, and it's now near parity. It goes to show you that this thing is fucking ready to fall. And people were fucking leveraging up, hoping this thing would go back to parity. They made money on that. But I can't believe people were fucking degenning that much. Anyways, Joey, that's my two cents. I'm fucking still pissed off about this. Those four, or I think four people, they're my no coiners of the week. I'll bring them up later again for selling stock and fucking shareholders and the customers. There you go, Joey. It's all over to you.
Quite a lot to take in there. And I think all of that is important information. Honestly, Len, there's so much going on. We should know, I know you don't want to talk about the exact mechanism, but we should at least do like a 30,000 foot, because I think a lot of people don't really understand, especially the Silicon Valley Bank one. Silicon Valley Bank was in this weird niche, like you mentioned, but the niche really, it's not like it's a boutique bank, quote unquote, like Silvergate was for crypto. These guys are actually risking deposits in a way that generally is frowned upon in financial markets. They're loaning out deposits to other startups and trying to make money this way. So startup money comes in, they loan it out to other startups. You can imagine how this goes most of the time when the interest rates go from 0 to 5 in about 18 months, right? Or 16 months. It's very difficult to manage those deposits and those bets. Now, worse, the other thing that I didn't hear you talk about there, but we should talk about, is mark-to-market government paper. Mark-to-market either mortgage-backed securities or mark-to-market government treasuries. The reason that you see a bunch of withdrawals from SVB in particular really is there's a few prongs there, but we'll go through them quickly just so everyone's on the same page before we keep going. One reason is the burn rate for the startups goes way up when the interest rates go up and when the funding starts to taper off in a tight financial environment. So what do you get there? You get withdrawals exceeding deposits. That's problem number one. Problem number two is when you get a bunch of deposits, as SVB did during probably 20 and 21 and probably the beginning part of 22, you can't sit in cash and you can't put all of it into bets. So what do? Well, you buy government paper, partially because it was legislated by the United States government that you had to put some percentage into government paper, and partially because it just made sense. And so what do? They bought 5-year bonds at 2% or something like that. And then when 5-year bonds went up to 5%, all the people with cash in those banks are going, hey, I can get more money somewhere else. I want it all. And so what did SVB have to do? They had to try and package the debt at distressed prices to make up the difference. They couldn't do it. And then there's notice about an equity, an attempt to raise equity in the company to dilute the shares and bring in some capital that way. Doesn't work. Then that coincides with Peter Thiel basically going, get your money out of there, like yelling fire in the movie theater, right? And before you know it, you got a bank run. And that's it. That's all it took. We should note that in 08, it took like weeks of this sort of trickle behavior to get the run that we saw. And here it happened on a weekend, basically in like less than 24 hours. We all knew what was going to happen on Monday morning. Now the government, as part of the bailout package, is doing at par redemptions for government yes. debt. Like it's honestly unbelievable. So what have you done there? You've basically perverted. Like interest rates don't matter then. If you just buy at a rate you don't like, all you have to do is get a bunch of VCs. Like, honestly, Glenn, all it took basically was the four guys from the All In podcast constantly saying on Twitter and on their show, there's going to be a bank run. There's going to be a bank run. There's going to be a bank run. You got to get your cash out unless there's a bailout. We got to make sure all depositors are secure. FDIC doesn't matter. Save every dollar. Save every person. They do that for about 12 or 24 hours. And before you know it, it's a reality. This is another example, like we've talked about in the past, governments and government agencies trying to use outdated tools to address modern problems. You can't fight a Twitter beehive like this you can't have Powell and Yellen going on TV Sunday morning. Yellen was on TV Sunday morning saying there's no contagion possible. We got it under control. And then 6 hours later, they have to bail out the bank. They take possession of Signature and they bail out, Signature and Silicon Valley Bank depositors at full clip. So the other thing, as well as interest rates that now don't matter and risk doesn't matter, there's no risk anymore. On top of that, now the FDIC insurance doesn't matter. If you got more than $250,000, like who cares? If as long as you're in a bank that's, you know, kind of close enough to the stuff that's untouchable, or like to the castle walls, you're going to get bailed out. It's a disaster for all this stuff. You mentioned the Canadian government. There's an account. The quality of this account, I'm not 100% sure on. I should lead with that. Bushels per acre. Great name for a Twitter account. Has a quote tweet of Freeland's statement on Silicon Valley Bank. And it says, SVB had a Canadian branch that the Canadian regulators just seized. They had loans of $435 million in Canada and $864 million in Canadian assets somehow. Another venture capital debt company. Freeland is terrified about a bank run in Canada, but all the statement does is make. And then I didn't expand the tweet. But you can guess what the rest of that tweet says. Now, before I continue here, in terms of like where the problems were and some of the feedback, I just want to note one thing. I think me and you are guilty of this sometimes. I know other people on Twitter are guilty about this. Are guilty of this. There's been a lot of talk about the response from government officials, whether it was Yellen yesterday, Biden today, that 5 minute. I have never seen anything like that 5 minute speech today. That was unbelievable. But when I think back and like kind of pull myself away from it, from the hysteria and insanity and memes, I got to ask myself, and I want to know what you think before we continue. What should he be saying there? He basically only has one possible route. And it is to say nothing's wrong. He has to say that. He cannot give you an honest answer. So as investors, as citizens, like what should we expect from our leadership in that scenario? I don't know exactly, but I think that it's unreasonable to expect that this guy has, first of all, a great grasp of the situation. It's difficult to understand this stuff for anyone, let alone a guy who, you know, is hanging on by a thread, let's face it. And on top of that, if he mentions anything in any detail and is off about some of the detail, he'll get jumped on. And so you saw today, even after that reassuring speech, most of the regional financials were down somewhere between 40 and 70%, the big ones. You mentioned a few of the names off the hop there. I forget who they are now, but we've seen this table a few times today where basically it's either a Bloomberg terminal or a StockTwits page or whatever, and everything is red by a huge, huge margin. So if he doesn't come out and say everything's going to be okay, that would have been way worse. I actually think that's the case. And so I'm going to not give him a pass because it's not great, but I also don't know what else he should say. And so, in my view, we have to come to some reasonable expectation of what we expect from our leadership. Now, I got a gem for you, okay? Mm. You know the audit firm KPMG. We've talked about them before, right?
They bought some Bitcoin and Ethereum.
NFTs too, World of Women NFTs, remember? And we were criticizing them because the diligence there was lacking.
Don't criticize them for that fucking purchase. What a fucking joke that is.
It was lacking, right? And so I want to note here that KPMG gave Silicon Valley Bank a clean audit report 2 weeks ago.
Clean report. Thing I would like
to, I got I one more for you. Is,
oh, go
it
ahead.
Gave Signature Bank a clean audit report 11 days ago. Do you know how many companies, financial or otherwise, are audited by KPMG and get a stamp from KPMG? All the monsters.
Tons.
Every monster in the world goes to KPMG.
It goes to show you that their reports,
they're bogus.
It's meaningless.
They're bogus.
It's meaningless. There may be some validity somewhere, but in terms of banking, and given the fact there's so many variables here that could make a bank be solvent one day and insolvent the next,
yeah,
the report is meaningless. Maybe if they do an architectural firm, maybe they could give a report on that and it may be factual. But for banking, the way we're looking at it now, because the whole system is fake, the report is fake too.
It's all made up. Friends of ours, Max Gagliardi and Doomberg, did a podcast today. I'm about halfway through. Doomberg's got a great line in there that nothing will ensure that you run out of money faster than people thinking you might run out of money. It's so true. Like the chicken and egg, you just don't know what's going to come first. But if you see one, the other is going to follow. And these guys are really in a precarious situation for a number of different reasons. But among them, the speed that this is happening with now is like unbelievable. Now, this one other thing I want to mention here, because I don't want to spend all our time on this. Really, like, closing up.
No, we can. This is the topic of the year. It looks like up until now.
It could be. I will say that there's at least two articles. One from National Post, is it the National Post or Globe and Mail, and one from Wall Street Journal's editorial board. Both of which say, "Stop intervening in these messes. Let these things fail." I'm bringing this up because, if you recall, Chamath, you know, who had some level of fame during the, you know, before the pandemic, but really rose to fame for going on CNBC and talking about letting the airlines fail because there was poor risk managers. They didn't manage their balance sheet properly. They didn't do their due diligence. They weren't prepared for a black swan. They should have been ready. You know, Chamath is one of the voices on the All In show that was demanding a bailout and pretending he didn't have any exposure, pretending he was above it. His firm was above it. Social Capital, whatever. I can't remember the name of his firm. I think that's it. But, you know, clearly, Len, these guys who want other people to fail when it means they can get distressed assets do not want to be subjected to the same procedural stuff, the same outcomes, the same results when it's their books that are getting fried by other billionaires. I also want to note that Peter Thiel and David Sachs are very good friends, and those guys co-founded PayPal with Musk. And so, you know what I want to know? I want to know what the next poker game between those guys is going to be like. You got one guy almost bankrupting the other guy, and the poor sucker on the other end of it, Sachs, is going, "Oh my, we need to be bailed out. We need to, like, all this stuff." It's so weird that if you really pull back and look at what happened over the last 4 days, you could really look at like 5, 6, 7 names who really drove the entire narrative from start to finish. Thiel, Sachs, Kalkanis, Chamath, Bill Ackman, right? Who's now writing.
He's another fucking.
He's writing poetry on Twitter, basically demanding to be bailed out at like a million characters a post. Yellen. And I don't know. Who's the other one? Is it Biden? Is it Powell? Is it, I don't know. But, you know, it's like 5 or 6 people driving the whole thing. This is another problem with the system we're in, that you and me, stuff just happens to us, right? I don't have a say in what goes on at that level. I'm just subjected to the outcome that a bunch of people with a bunch more skin in the game get to decide on my behalf is the best thing for me. You mentioned this thing about, you know, the Biden talking about the cost will not be borne by the taxpayer. I don't know what world this guy thinks people are living in. But, you know, right after that speech, you might have seen two announcements from the White House. One is that Biden is looking for $860 billion to go to Ukraine in total. And
yeah, they can find that in the seat cushions. It's got to be
$860 billion. And the other is that they just approved a huge oil project in Alaska, despite climate fears or whatever. Like, these guys are, it's all a finesse, man. And you mentioned the Federal Reserve modifying its inflation, its year out inflation view from 5% to 4.2% and then to 3% after that. Like, it's clear they want to stop raising rates. It's been clear for a long time. I'll leave you with
and,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Okay. Well, I was going to say, the White House was saying that it looks like the CPI may be pretty good. I mean, they get this information well in advance. So this thing is going to be 4.2 or something on paper decent. As soon as you start sifting through the paper,
they're done raising. They're done raising. And I want to know one thing here about Signature Bank. And you can say whatever you want about, you know, Nick Carter, choke point, blah, blah, blah. But I think he's right about this. And he's not the only guy saying this, that the Fed didn't have to close Signature Bank and stop people from interacting with crypto companies. But they did. That's exactly what they did. And I think we should be worried about that this is going to eventually come back on crypto and Bitcoin. And it's hard to differentiate between those two things for the average person. The same people who don't know anything about what's going on here are not going to come to support Bitcoin over crypto. They're not going to do it. They don't know. They don't have the bandwidth to do that stuff. So, yeah, all in all, man, quite a day. The 2 year today, it's had its worst day since 86 or 87, whatever 87. Year it was. Yeah. So, Like that kind of stuff. Those are signposts. You know, I don't know if the bleeding's done. I don't know if it's going to be worse tomorrow. I really have no idea. But if the contagion really does exist and spreads to other institutions, look out, man. Look out, honestly, because that $25 billion that the Fed has in this, or the FDIC, excuse me, has in this slush fund now, ain't going to be enough. It ain't going to be enough. Yeah.
The faith in the banking system right now, I will say it's at as low or maybe even lower than it was in 2008. 2008 was very bad.
Okay, let me ask something, because I've heard this a couple of times from people that you and me talk about. Are you sure it's just not us to think that and no one else actually cares about this at all?
Well, the people that were lined up outside SVB branches and over the weekend, they don't have faith in the system. Now, on a grander scale, probably not. Probably people are just, they have their head buried in the sand. They're still talking about the Oscars. But the people that were impacted, well, they're talking to their family, their friends, and that information spreading. And now you have the 16th largest bank, that's what SVB was, collapse. Now, what are they going to do? Do you think those people that, even if that bank survives, will their customers stay with that bank? Or would they go to somewhere else? Now, if they go to somewhere else, this thing could continually spread. And eventually, you're going to have less and less banks out there, because if another one falls, another one falls, you're basically closing the circle. And the Fed can't bail all these things out. It's impossible to do so and still fund a war in Ukraine and still send all that the ammunition and weapons over there. Because, you know, the U.S. military, on a different topic, they're not in a good position when it comes to inventory of weapons, because they sent so much out. So United States, if you look at it, and they've been poking the Russian bear for quite some time, and China has been aligning themselves more and more with Russia. United States looks like they're impervious to attack now more than ever. Their financial system is wrecked. They have a leader out there that may not want to have a war at any cost. They don't have enough ammunition to have a prolonged war. And they're running out of allies. Who's going to come and step in and say, we're going to step in with the United States? A lot of these countries don't even have the energy required to heat their own citizens' homes, let alone power their war machines. So looking at this, I'm not going to say that attack is going to happen, but the United States looks weaker now than it has ever in my lifetime. And that's saying something.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's pretty wild, man. I have nothing else to add on this story. I've been banked out now for the last like 48, 72 hours. And I think honestly, Len, there's going to be more to come. There's going to be more to come.
The SPR reserves, Bitcoin is saying that. And I actually have a note on that. If you look at the reserves, and I looked at it just a little while ago, they haven't increased their supply since December 30th, 2022. The supply has remained stagnant, the exact same amount of numbers, 371.58 million barrels. That's 3 months in, two months and change in. It has not changed. They're not adding to it, but they're not depleting, which is good. But they've depleted a heck of a lot from that. And this is also going to be impactful if there's going to be some sort of war that they require this crude to be converted into diesel or gas or whatever to fund their war machine. I'm looking at this. This is nuts. But
precarious.
Anyway.
It's all a precarious situation, right? And TJM in the chat is saying it's an unscheduled Fed meeting. I'm not 100% sure that it's unscheduled. It looks to me, after talking to a few people, including TXMC, who's pretty reliable, that wording is pretty standard for Fed meetings. The question I haven't seen answered is whether or not there's anything to this bit about it being quote unquote closed door. No one seems to have a good answer for that. So I don't know.
Was it 11 a.m.?
It's tomorrow, right? Or today, sorry. Yeah, it was today. So closed door today. I don't know. I don't know what it means. And I can't find anywhere. I don't have the chops to figure this out. So one of the things we talk about is the gatekeeping that goes on at the institutional level in Canada, the States, whatever. But what I'm really not, you know, what I'm really very sure about when it comes to that gatekeeping is that all these terms and, you know, the language they use, it's intentionally obfuscating the true nature of a meeting or the true nature of a bailout or the true nature of whatever. It's meant to just kind of, you know, quell the masses. To placate people and make sure there's not an uprising. And so I don't know, man. I think all this stuff, this should worry you. The Wall Street Journal article is free. I think, like, I don't have an account, but I screen capped the entire article. So if you guys try and read it and can't, let me know. I'll put it in the chat here. But for the Wall Street Journal to come out, like, I don't know, pretty clearly against, I wish I had the link. I don't. For them to come out pretty clearly against Yellen, basically saying she's engaging in semantics and not to believe her, it's a bailout and it's going to cost people. That's got to be a first. You know, there was to your point earlier about the US being weak. One of the things that makes an event like this palatable for taxpayers is if there's some element of unity. And it seems to me that there's just no unity in the States. I mean, there's not during the best of times these days. You got the January 6th tapes coming out, the Twitter files, the political divides, hot button issues like gender ideology, critical race theory. These things are very divisive. And this is the kind of thing where if you're taking what they're calling, you know, extreme action, you need people to be united across political lines. And people are just, they're not, right? They're just, they're plain and simple, they're not. And it makes this stuff a lot less palatable. So
what are the chances a lot of this divisiveness in United States and Canada too is a result of outside influences?
I don't know.
Kind of imposing these. I'm wondering, because I don't know if these are organically grown in-house. And if you look at, for example, the amount of money, the endowments that's going to United States schools, post-secondary education, a lot of it is coming from China, and they're able to influence what is going to be the curriculum and what's the topics that are going to be talked about and all that. They're obviously going to have stuff that is more pro-China, and maybe not say that it's going to be divisive, but they could kind of implant it in such a way that it's not easily found. But if you dig through it and then you go through TikTok, which is run by a Chinese company, and the algorithm there could feed whatever they want. We have no idea what the fuck it's doing. And it's shaping the way people are thinking with this low time preference, you know, just click, 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 or swipe, swipe, swipe. And you're just happy to see the next one within 30 seconds or less, where the fuck it is. It's shaping a lot of people's minds too. And they could formulate people's opinions in all the wrong way. And this is just, I'm just wondering how much of this is outside influence.
We're going to see, man, at some point. You know, they'll try, like Biden today, again, like I wish I didn't have to get political on this fucking show, because it's everything we talk about is politics related at some point. But like for Biden to come out and blame Trump for the lack of regulation. The lack of regulation in the banks. And like, he's talking about Dodd-Frank, undoing Dodd-Frank. Barney Frank is on the fucking board at Silicon Valley. Or Signature, one of the two, I forget. Like, this guy architected the responsible banking bill. If he can't put together a bank that can withstand something like this, like these guys, again, they just think you're so stupid. They just think you're so stupid.
This is politics.
It's crazy.
Always blame. It's the cumulative effect to the point where you took office, and it's always the people before you that created the mess, and now you're trying to fix. That's what.
Yeah,
the narrative always is. But then when you take office, you don't fix it. You just make it worse. And then nobody takes accountability.
I just need four more years. I'll fix it. No problem.
And another $5 trillion later, here we go. And oh, shit. Yeah. It's, you know. And
So I would love to see, and I'm sure we'll get this from someone who's smarter than you and me, Lynn Alden maybe, or Preston will put together a thread, or someone else. Like, what is the total cost of this going to be, this program? When you think about the administrative cost, the cost to the government balance sheet to retake all that paper at par, like it's not going to be just 25. It's never just the ticket price. It's never just the ticket price. It's going to be so much more expensive than that. And the money, like this is the other thing. Right? The government has to admit that the White House has to admit that the money either comes from somewhere or it comes from nowhere. But in either case, it's the wrong answer. If it comes from nowhere, then why am I talking about paying my taxes? If it comes from somewhere, then who's it come from? It's coming from me. Like at the end of the, like this is the, it's so obvious. It's like a first principles way to think about this, but really that's all it takes. You know, you don't have to be in the middle of the bell curve. You can be on either end and get the same result. There's no need to ask deep questions about, well, why were they in this risky asset? Why did they have so many treasuries? Why did they deal in mortgage-backed securities? All you have to ask is, where's the money come from? Is it coming from nowhere or is it coming from somewhere? That's it, right? Like, isn't that it? That's it. It's coming from nowhere. It's coming from somewhere. That's all you have to worry about. And people don't think in these terms. It's unbelievable. All you know, it's great though. For Bitcoin to be holding up as well as it is, I mean, there's some bittersweet there. Probably people are basically banking on now a pause this week from the Federal Reserve and or a pause at the next meeting, I should say, from the Federal Reserve and cuts in the summer. Friend of the show, SB from Oak Antidote, showing us in the terminal today the commentary and the Treasury 2-year and 5-year charts. No one thinks they're going to raise anymore. That they think the regime is done raising. They have quote unquote broken something, as they say. So I don't know, man, Bitcoin benefiting from that, but I am like, it's concerning, Len, because if there's cracks in the armor next door, you know, probably our our financial house is in a lot worse shape, right? It's almost invariably the case.
Yeah. And right now we're dealing with more important problems like high grocery cost, and we're subpoenaing the people over there to discuss why it is they're gouging the customers for high cost of meat, bread, eggs, and everything else. So that's the stuff that's really most important. And it's funny, they're doing that at the very same time that there is a discussion about interference by China in potentially two different elections. This is reports by CSIS, and I'm not really making shit up. This is from what I'm reporting or reading from our intelligence service over here.
Right.
So, you know, you have that, you know, to me, that seems like an important issue that needs to be discussed. I mean, you know, maybe you should put away the Galen Westons of the world and whoever else that you're talking about high cost of groceries. And let's talk.
Did you watch that little exchange that they had?
Disgusting. When they had the pictures and stack of papers. And that was his 15 minutes. And this, I almost want to say, the sad thing about it is this, he was months in the making to have this particular moment come to play. And it finally did. And it was overshadowed because of what CSIS reported. It's almost like it was poetic justice in a way to see what happened here. But anyways, I kind of feel bad for him in a way, but whatever.
I thought Weston really cut him down to size. Charlebois, Sylvain Charlebois, the food professor, made a good point on Twitter, and you know, it's right there for you to listen to if you want to listen to the thing. Galen Weston basically says, like, hey, buddy, the profits don't fall all into my pocket. You know, there's a lot of NDP union people who invest in Loblaws as a pension as well. Like, if we're not making money, people are not retiring as comfortably. And Jagmeet Singh honestly looked like he had just been hit by a bus when Weston said that, because he's like, oh yeah, I never thought about that. Like, oh my God, like a disaster. He was hyping it up like an HBO boxing match, the fucking graphics on Twitter. It's embarrassing. It's such an embarrassment, that guy.
I don't want to go any further.
I can't stand that guy.
Let's talk about Bitcoin related news. I do have a little bit I want to talk about. And this kind of flew under the radar now. It was big news last week, but it seems to be forgotten this week. Remember the SEC? They were talking about the whole Grayscale, and there was that was pretty big news. Like, it looks like they have maybe able to find a chink in the armor of the SEC to potentially show that there may be they may be biased in their decisions moving forward. I don't know. I'm not saying that Grayscale is going to win this judgment, but the arguments they're proposing and the defense that the SEC is coming to the table with, the judge is kind of looking like deciding with Grayscale, which
looks incredibly well. Judge looks incredibly well informed. The questions that are being asked are very good. The gist of the argument is basically that, well, if you're not familiar with
the versus spots,
yeah, if you're not familiar with the Grayscale ETF/trust, the SEC's position is that spot market in Bitcoin is manipulated, and to this point. Grayscale's case has basically been it's not manipulated, but now they've changed their approach. The new Grayscale approach is that the spot market can't be manipulated if you've allowed a futures contract, which is also based on spot price, just at a later date, basically. And so I kind of sympathize with that point of view. And it sounds like the judge is asking the SEC a lot of hard questions. You know, how do you square this circle? You think the spot market is manipulated. You won't let them trade spot, but you will trade a product that is based on the spot price, just not today, some other time. And I think that's a pretty good argument. And I'm surprised they haven't made that argument yet. It seems kind of, you know, intuitive. Maybe they just overlooked it, or maybe they thought it was too easy and didn't make it until now.
Well, they just got the futures approved last year.
But they've been going down this road, right? They've tried to get that ETF approved a few times. So
the futures, I'm not sure how long it took for them to.
It's been 2 years.
You
and me have been talking about that futures thing for almost a year and a half, probably.
Could be. I can't remember when it came out, but it did come out to much fanfare.
It came out when everyone was still wearing masks. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure I told you about it. Maybe you didn't hear me through my baggy blue. Maybe that was the problem.
I'm still wearing one.
Nice.
I don't leave the house without one. N95 all the way, brother. So anyways, the White House, they're saying that there's going to be potentially a 30% energy exercise tax on Bitcoin mining. And again, this was bigger news last week. It's kind of lost this week. The question I have is, this is obviously going to impact Bitcoin mining operations in the United States, but does this impact companies that generate and use their own energy. I'll give you an example, like Cathedra Bitcoin, where they harness the natural gas from orphan wells, and from that they use that to power generators and power miners and go from there. They're not plugged into a grid. So I'm certain they wouldn't be subjected
to this. You know the answer already. You know the answer.
Well, I don't really know it, because the reason why is you're creating your own power. So why would you be subjected to an energy tax if you're not drawing energy from anywhere else? It's your own energy source. You know, like if you own the land, you own the well, why would you be subjected to the tax if you're using all the energy yourself? I would like to hear a rational decision why they would be subjected to it.
They don't have to do it, or they don't have to make a rational decision. They don't have to play by any rules. They operate on the fringe. They'll find a way to tax you.
Well, for sure they'll find a way. But the ones I'm just hypothesizing here, if indeed something like Cathedra and other companies like them are not subjected to this type of tax, it makes them much more efficient than their competitors of mining Bitcoin. And it could be a huge advantage. So something to consider if you are looking at companies like them. And it looks like Biden is also going to be, or his proposed budget, something in a budget that's going to include provision to close tax loss harvesting on transactions of crypto, like stuff like Bitcoin. And you were saying that this might potentially stop some of the downward pressure where people are selling it and claiming the losses.
It will. The question is, will it matter that much? I don't know.
A small percentage. I mean, really, more than anything, I think the NFT market would get rugged by this, because then they could buy whatever a huge cost and do whatever they want with it and claim it a loss. And
they are in deep shit. I said, we were talking about this on Mike's show on Money Talks on Friday, this 30% tax. This kind of stuff drives me nuts, because it doesn't solve any of the problems they claim that they're having, right? The U.S. government talks a lot about the cost of energy and the you know, quote unquote, greenness of energy and all this kind of stuff. They don't care that most of Bitcoin, or what is it, 30 or 40% of the network is renewables. I don't know what that percentage is in the U.S. Presumably it's fairly high. They don't care about demand response in these areas that have rolling blackouts somehow in the year 2023. You still can't get fucking power when you want to turn your AC on in the summer. It's not like we don't know the summer is going to be hot. It's always hot. I don't know why we have this problem. But the thing that really drives me nuts, and I said it before, and I realize that I'm not a Space Force cadet or whatever, so maybe I'm missing something. We can pass this off to Lowry and see what he thinks. But like
he banned me one time when I blocked me.
there's an inverse correlation then between the power consumption and adoption between the US dollar and Bitcoin. As the US dollar sees less and less people willing to adopt it, the power exertion goes up, the energy consumption goes up, the bloodshed goes up. In Bitcoin, it's the opposite. As power consumption goes up, it means more people are adopting it. It's a more peaceful protocol, right? This nonsense about Bitcoin uses too much energy, it's fucking horseshit. It's horseshit. We are not doing anything wrong. And like I said to Mike too, as there's a continued rise in kind of hobbyist miners who are using stuff like S9s and other stuff to mine Bitcoin, even some of these products, like I may not agree with the Heatbit, you know, from a product point of view. You're looking at me like you've never heard of it. A Heatbit is basically, it seems to me like a stripped down S9 basically that is a space heater. And
I've seen that. I think
It looks really sharp.
Somebody we know has one.
Dennis Porter has one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but there's somebody else, and I don't want to name just in case you're doing it under the table.
Wow,
but
nice. I would like to buy one.
They're costly though. And
they're about $1,000. But the point I'm trying to make is that, like, are you going to really penalize the guy who's heating his house with a Bitcoin miner, using his Bitcoin miner to run his dryer, using his Bitcoin miner to do whatever, right? Like, heat his garage. Are we really going to do this? And the other thing that I didn't mention on Mike's show, because I could feel myself getting worked up, is we cannot ever allow for a government to tell us how we can use power. We can't. It's already too close to that in terms of these carbon taxes and stuff like that. But you should be able to use energy however you want if you pay for it, period. There should be no additional tax for power consumed in a certain way. I've mentioned this before. It's near and dear to me because I think pornography is like the worst thing that's happened in modern society. But like, you know, if people are allowed to use power to consume pornography and just dull themselves down, then they should be allowed to use power to do Bitcoin mining as well. It's ridiculous we're even having this conversation, but we have to, because if we don't get the message out there, no one's going to hear it. And it's important to kind of make this to plant our flag here. Like, enough's enough. We're not going to go down this road where you can tell me what I can use power for. It's ridiculous, completely ridiculous.
It's going to get worse moving forward. The reason being is because we need to use energy for our daily lives more and more ever before. And it's going to get more and more energy usage moving forward. Look, they're talking about stopping the sale of internal combustion engine cars in a lot of countries, including Canada. And if that's the case, what alternative do you have? Uber or taxi everywhere, or buy an electric car? Well, there's another one you have to plug in and be subjected to whatever sort of policy or regulations they impose on you. So it's only going to get worse. And yeah, it's too bad. But I want to move on. Cynthia Lummis, did you see her? She was talking about Bitcoin and the clowns that they had on there. I'm not sure if you saw the exchange. I'll send you the link. So it was excellent dialogue between, she was educating people what Bitcoin mining is. And she was basically saying the same energy used to power up a electric car is the same energy that's used to power a Bitcoin miner, which is fucking true. So if you're going to vilify one, you got to vilify them both. Or if you're going to praise one, you got to praise them both, because they're coming from the same source. It's not like a Bitcoin miner only takes, when you plug it into the grid, it's green, I'm not going to touch it. It gets the energy from wherever it gets produced from. And that's the same thing with a car that's electric that you plug in to the grid.
Right.
So the type of ideas, and they're vilifying Bitcoin in such a way that it just doesn't make sense, especially as they're trying to continually push electric cars. I'm not trying to say electric cars are bad, I actually kind of like them, but just this is the reality of it. And not sure if you saw this one, Arthur Hayes, really interesting one. He was proposing a Bitcoin-based stablecoin. He wants to name it the Satoshi Nakamoto dollar, and it would be called the Naka dollar. Check this one out. The holding would be a perpetual swap that shorts the price of Bitcoin along with $1 worth of Bitcoin, means the dollar remains the same regardless if it goes down or up. So they're going to be shorting it and going long at the same time. I don't know. Every time you see one of these things, Arthur Hayes, I respect him and his opinions, but this is kind of a gimmicky stablecoin. Look, a one-to-one backed stablecoin with US dollars theoretically should be the best one out there, but we just witnessed what happens. Even when they have that, they park the money in the bank fails, and now you don't have the ability to meet your obligations. These gimmicks, these algorithmic stablecoins, unfortunately, they'll all fail over time.
They don't work. They don't work.
Yeah. That's why. Interesting idea, Mr. Hayes, but I'm not going to buy it, man. I don't fucking buy it. The last thing I want to just mention is the New York Attorney General. They allege ETH is a security. This is according to a KuCoin lawsuit. Now, this is not the SEC. This is New York Attorney General. But this might have some implications moving forward. You're hearing a lot more stuff like this. And it's always about everything not named Bitcoin.
Yep.
So be very careful if you do hold one of these shitcoins, because eventually the United States is going to say, it's deemed to be a security, and the price is just going to fucking tank, and you're a bag holder at that point. And good luck getting your money back. It may take years, if ever, to see that again. And by then,
isn't it true that like the only use case for Ethereum at this point is basically just running scams on it? Like everything is just, it is, right? It's just DeFi, yield this, you know, tokenomics that. Like, I'm pretty sure, I don't know, is there anything else? Like, people have told me smart contracts and shit like that. You hear these two bankless guys who I have to listen to again this week because they have Brian Armstrong on. You know, I don't hear anything from these guys. Their advertisers are all just running yield products. So it's not like their advertisers are, you know, providing some kind of groundbreaking computational breakthrough development type product. Put our token with us and we'll give you yield in our token and the flywheel turns. Like, I don't understand what are people waiting for with this? Like, I don't get this. What are they hoping is going to pop up here?
I don't know. What could it be? Going to adopt ETH as a
they can't. And Mark says all the time, Jeff DeVick, like, ETH is going to be the hub for any CBDC that pops out. Like, that's what they're going to run it on. It's clear, you know, he calls it Wefthereum. It's a great name. It's exactly what it is. Like, it's very clearly been co-opted, and people who are waiting for something to pop up, some like valuable use case, like, what is it? I just don't know. We don't need, like, you don't need anything. I'm not breaking new ground here, but like, just to reiterate, blockchain is slow and ineffective at basically everything except money, and Ethereum's not money. So stop trying to pretend, right? Stop trying to make fetch happen, as the kids say. It's too far gone now. It's over. You're done. And you said that the, you know, New York AG is not the SEC. You can bet your fucking ass they talked to the SEC before that lawsuit was hitting the, you know, before the ink hit the page. It's not like they just made that up without consulting. I'm sure they did. And I'm sure they're on the same page. And so I am positive this will be something that gains traction, whether the two bankless guys cry about it on air or not. I think it's going to happen.
Can you give us an update how much yield you received from your staking your ETH? Because I'd love to know. Ladies and gentlemen, he's opening up the app for people that are not watching and listening to
on,
the audio.
On the air. On the air.
I'd love to hear. This is so groundbreaking far. Because Joey did, just for people that are unaware, Joey decided to take the bite the bullet for all of us.
It's so low.
And he decided to stake some money for ETH to see exactly what it's like.
I've gotten $5.91 Canadian so far.
In so, how long? That's like 3 months?
Months. Yeah, it's been a long time. In a long time.
A couple of coffees. Not too shabby. That's free money. Yeah.
If you want a cup of coffee every few months, this is the way to go. If they ever let me take it out, I can't get it out. Oh, that is. So
what you're getting, the yield you're getting, it's just going back into ETH 2.0 and stuck there.
I don't know, honestly. It's just another line in the app. It just says how much yield I have. I don't actually know where. I don't know.
Anyway, like the Shanghai.
It's a black box. Like I have no idea. This is what I said to you like a few weeks ago when I told you this. I have no idea where it goes. Like the yield is different every time. I don't know anything about this. So that's why, like for people who are buying this stuff, like if you're buying this, if you're a DCA-er on Ethereum, like what do you?
There is such a thing.
There's gotta be, right? Like people are buying this stuff. Like what are they looking at? What are they looking at when it comes to like, okay, this is a good idea. What's your yield? I don't know. It changes every week. Okay, well, can you get it out? No. Where does it go? I don't know. I guess it just continues to stake. Is that what it does? I don't know. I haven't staked it again. It just goes there and I can't get it, but I also don't know if it's staking. It's Schrodinger's ETH. I don't know anything. Like, I don't know what else to say about this. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
ETH Toronto is coming up.
When I pull it out, we'll fucking go live. I'll pull it out on air.
That would be a monument.
The ETH. I'll pull the ETH out on air. I don't want to get demonetized.
So yeah, ETH Toronto is coming up in August. And you know what, Joey, we do have one person that's going to be at least that said he'll help me out. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to dox anybody, but we have at least one person. If anybody else wants to join, be my guest. I'm going there to fucking troll and ask questions. If you want to be part of the crew, man, it'll be fun. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, Clown World North will be very, very brief on this because this has been a very informative show up until this point. Bank of Canada saying, or they said they're going to be holding their rates. They didn't raise them or lower them. They're just holding steady. So it is what it is. We have now also a record high number of people in Canada who don't think they'll ever afford a home, according to a survey. Now, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. What happens is the price of homes gets to the point that nobody could own one, and you basically give your idea what may potentially happen. But this is the reality. The price of homes has just run away so much because it is a hard asset, and it's a desirable asset at that, and people want to get a hold of it. And it should be consumable. It doesn't seem to be a case. It's just something I just appreciate.
We gotta mention here, breaking news in the chat. Jozu, ETH release to Unstake is going live tomorrow. Is that, I don't, if that's true.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the 14th. Shanghai thing was supposed to be the 14th. So
huge, that's tomorrow. Time to sell, boys. My $5 and get my coffee now.
Fucking no, leave it in there. Like, just let it roll. Let's see what happens with that. you lost it already. Like, why do anything?
I'll plus, if you do anything, it's taxable. Sell, yeah, I know.
You're kind of fucked. You were fucked as soon as you bought in. That was just, to be honest. So yeah, to go back, the people that are buying or that want to buy homes that are on the outside looking in, that's a growing number of people.
For sure.
The reality is, not just in Canada, but even in the United States, it's the people being, like the young people, it's the first time in a long time, in like 100 years, maybe, I don't know, maybe longer, that the children are going to be worse off than their parents. Because every year or every time before now, it's you were better off than your parents, at least statistically you were. But unfortunately, this is not the case because a lot of events, a lot of stupid decisions, and here we are. And you know what? I'm part of the stupid decision class because, you know, I help elect a lot of the people that got us here. So yeah, I'm part to blame with all this. But it's sad that a lot of people have basically come to realize they're not going to be able to own a home. And it's a dream for a lot of people, especially in Canada, and just it's going to be a dream for the rest of their lives.
It's gone. It's gone. Like the people talking now about high density housing. Like I get it. If you want to have a condo, that's fine. But high density is going to mean something barely human inside of 15 years if we keep going this route. You've already seen, like somehow we tried to pass off shipping containers as boutique living. Are you fucking joking me? It's a cargo container. Like what? No one should have to live in a cargo container. You get about, you know, between 75 and 100 years on this earth if you take care of yourself. Like if you spend a second living in a cargo container, you've been done a disservice. And you got to remember that when they try and pass this stuff off as livable.
I'm in a basement, so I don't know if I'm not much better than that. So anyways, I just wanted to note that Boomer in the chat is saying that maybe Jared could join me in this Ethereum adventure. And
happy birthday
to Jared. I mean, apparently he celebrated a fake birthday this past week. And
Jared, 17, congratulations.
Birthday, happy birthday, buddy, whatever your birthday is. Anyways, mortgages. I think this is the last topic I'm going to have here. Right. Is that the amortization period is longer than 30 years for the following. 32% of BMO customers, 30% of CIBC customers, 29% of TD, and 25% of RBC. RBC, for whatever reason, is much, much lower than the rest. But here you go. We talked about this last week. This is another stat that just proves the point that a lot of people are not opting, but forced into longer amortization periods as a result of getting into variable mortgage rates and rates going up massively. So it's too bad. A lot of people, they're just... these next few years, they're just going to be treading water at best. Hopefully they'll be able to put some more money away to pay off the principal. If not, they're just paying off the interest portion. And it's just the reality of it all. It's too bad.
Can you imagine if you were one of these people who didn't have a clue what you were doing, or like didn't have the firepower to look and to kind of digest the stuff that you and me talk about every week, and you decided that rates were going to keep going up because that's what Tiff Macklem said 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And you locked in 5 years at 5%, when meanwhile now it's like abundantly clear there's going to be a cut before the end of this year. Like this is like, we are doing things all wrong. Someone said in the chat earlier, a bunch of pensioners like deciding the price of money. It's fucking insane, man. It's insane. And it affects all the sort of people who can't afford to take the brunt of the pain more than it affects anyone else. It's ridiculous. Like all the sort of wealthy people, and you and me are not wealthy, but like, I think we got a pretty good handle on this stuff. So it doesn't really bother me day to day, but if I didn't have a handle on this, this would drive me nuts. It would really be bothering me. Like my anxiety would be up, my blood pressure would be up, my wife would be mad at me, my kids would hate me, I wouldn't be in the gym, like all that stuff, right? It's so detrimental to just the well-being of society to have these levers and buttons being, you know, pushed and pulled by people who just, they will say anything to make you happy in the moment, even if they know it's not going to be the case in a week or a month. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's the only option.
No doubt.
That's
man.
It. That's it, ladies and gentlemen.
I like that. Short show. It's great.
No, it's, I guess, yeah. We were talking about that one topic forever.
This is dense. This is a dense program. When you got to do all that research, you're looking at this shit all day for like 4 days. It's, yeah. I'm glad. I'm happy about this.
You know, the reality is that dominated my whole news. I couldn't really find anything else because that was always there. So, you know, we talked about the Biden 30% inclusion of tax on miners, Bitcoin miners. That came out last week, but it's been, forget about it. It was big news last week. It's gone today. Nobody gives a fuck about that because so much bigger things have come about since then. But I do have a no-coiner of the week, and I don't have a Bitcoiner. My no-coiner, I mentioned them earlier. I'm just going to bring them up again. It's the executives from SVB that sold their shares within 40 days of this bank going tits up. So I'm going to name them Gregory Becker, Michael Zucker, Daniel Beck, Michelle Draper. All four of you are my no-coiners of the week. You fucked over shareholders. You fucked over your customers. You knew what you're doing beforehand, so fuck you.
I don't really have anything prepared, but I'm going to go with the all in guys, my no coiners of the week, shaping the narrative all weekend, basically forcing people to believe that their savings were not safe because they lost money in Silicon Valley Bank or their founders lost money in Silicon Valley Bank. And, they, you know, I think what they've done is maybe criminal, honestly. And, I hope that there's more investigation into exactly what effects some of the stuff they said all weekend had on what happened today and what happened yesterday. So my No Corners of the Week, the All In guys. I will continue to listen, unfortunately, because I'm addicted to that show. But yeah, they really should look in the mirror and think about what's happened here.
And before we sign off, just want to say to everybody in the chat, this has been a rocking chat, a very well-attended one at that. So thank you very much for appearing. And if you're listening to this on audio, you might as well join us on Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, and join in the chat because it's a lot of fun. And plus, you could ask us questions on the fly or send us some comments. Maybe we said something that's very, you know, you don't like it and you want to let us
maybe,
know.
Maybe you disagreed and you want me to smack you down live on the air. Put it in the chat and I'll grant you your wish. No problem. Anytime.
With that, price of Bitcoin, Joy, did we go up or down?
Let's see. 24,170 right now, US. Thank God it was on my block clock there. Interesting that, or it's actually 24,090 now. A little bit of a drop.
Yeah.
Because the daily just finished at 8, right? So there's always some volatility around the candle.
So it's 33,183 in Canadian dollars. And yeah, whatever. It's trading 24/7. So daily, whatever. Weekly, whatever. Yeah. Yearly, whatever. 24/7, this thing. It's been a year since we had any hiccup, I think, with the network. So it's been pretty good. Not a year, a decade.
A decade.
So it's been a long time. So
God bless everyone. We'll see you in the after show. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube, watch that. And if you're not, then take care of yourself. We'll see you Wednesday with Francis Puyo, Bull Bitcoin.
Yeah. Take care and PV.